What we say can make a difference so much. And I know that I have even preached on this a little bit before, but I'm going to preach on this until I die. By our very words, we can make a person's day or we can completely shatter them. That's a lot of power that we carry within our own soul, that we can actually go to somebody and we can give them words of encouragement, or we can make their day just a terrible day by the things that we say. But before that, what I want to talk about is mountain lions or pumas. I like calling them pumas because that's probably what I would yell if I saw one. I wouldn't have time to yell mountain lion. I would just puma and run for it. For a long time, scientists believed that the mountain lion, the cougar, whatever you want to call them, that they were loners, that they moved around by themselves, that they got together for two reasons, to mate and to fight, and that was it. And so if you saw one, good chances were that there was one of them out hunting. As a matter of fact, on our honeymoon, where were we? We were in some mountain area thing there in the middle of God's country, and it was the fall, and this just shows how brave I am, but I'm going to brag on myself here. It was the fall, and we were looking at scenic views and stuff, so we pulled over to this kind of isolated thing, and there was, we got out of the car, and we were going to go look at this mountainside and take pictures of all this stuff, and out of the corner of my eye, I see, I see a cougar. I tell Allison and Murray. Murray was with us on our honeymoon. Our dog was with us on our honeymoon. I tell them both, stay here, because I learned in stories that if you see a cougar, what you have to do is you have to scream and you have to make yourself big. You have to show them that you're bigger than them. And 99% of the time, they'll just say, that guy's a freak, and just take off. And so this happened. I practiced this once because my son and I were on a bike ride once, and we end up in the middle of nowhere, and out of nowhere, these dogs come out, and I went, whoa! And it turns out they're really nice little tiny farm dogs. And I just scared the crap out of them, and they just took off. So I see, I tell them, stay there, and there's a little bit like a rock or something, and so I go around the rock, and I'm making myself big, and I'm about ready to scream, and I see that what I saw was a rabbit. and the rabbit is looking at me like, what did I do to you? But what Allison in her niceness said, but you still get points because you thought it was a mountain lion and you were going to protect us, so I get that going. Anyway, back to the puma. They thought that the mountain lions were singled out. They traveled by themselves. They were not in packs, anything like that. And so the words grew out, and people that studied, if you went to places where you studied like wildlife or anything like that, you would read that these are nomadic, and they are they isolate, and so. But these guys have been around longer than we have, just so you know. And that story has been about them, has traveled for generations to generations to generations until somebody decided to do an in-depth study of these guys. And they attached, they captured one of them, put it to sleep, and knocked it out. They didn't put it to sleep, but they put the little thing, on the monitoring system and all that stuff. And they started to be able to track the activity. And as soon as they tracked that they made a kill, they would set up cameras, movement cameras. I don't know how they did that, but they would go in and secretly set up cameras. And what they found was that these guys often shared meals with other mountain lions. They'd go in there and growl and stuff, and they learned that they actually had this behavior that one of them would say, I'm going to share my meal with you, but the next time that you catch something, you get to share your meal with me. And they started to, they hunted by themselves, but they ate in communities and together and all that kind of stuff. They just found this out. And this is the thing that about science and stuff like that, is oftentimes we think we have something figured out in the world, and then something happens and we go, well, that's not what we thought. And so for years, what they realized when they were interviewing somebody, I found this all out on NPR. There's a great story about them. And when they interviewed the person, what they found out, they said, well, how did you guys all think that they were loners and all of that kind of stuff, and that they didn't eat, they ate by themselves and all this stuff? How did you find that out? And the scientist person said, turns out that was a myth. They never had any scientific evidence to support that. It's just that the word traveled from one person to the other person, and that's what they believed about this entire species, was that they did this until somebody put this little tag on this guy and found out that they were wrong all these years. Isn't it amazing how quickly we can assume something about somebody only to find out that we're wrong? Because the way that we find out the truth is not by our assumptions or the myth, but by actually what we see. They put into action what they see and found out that what they thought was incredibly wrong. I wonder if we do that to ourselves a lot. I wonder if we do that. They did that to Paul. If you're just joining us, last week we were talking about how Paul is on trial. He's going to be on trial in Rome. And they had to sail to take him and a bunch of other prisoners, 276 of them, people, on a boat. And somewhere around here, a hurricane-like storm came up and started to crash the boat. And so they had to make an emergency landing at this very tiny island called Malta there. And as they were jumping off ship and swimming to this tiny island, they were actually seeing the ship itself just kind of tear apart. So they get to there, and they are, imagine this, there's an island, it's not a deserted island, it actually has people on there. It has the Maltanians, and they're this group of people, and they have seen the ship coming. Not only have they seen it, but they have heard it, because when a storm is coming and it's banking against a wooden ship and stuff, you can actually hear that happening, and the ship is falling apart. You can hear that. So they have gathered around to see what's happening, and they are coming to shore. They're swimming to shore. And these people are graciously helping these folks. Paul comes to shore. He swims to shore. And imagine this. They're worn out. They are. You have swam. You have fought this incredible storm for several days. And you're landing on this thing here. And what they're doing is they are gathering stuff that they can. There's debris. There's other people. There's people that couldn't swim that are floating in on wooden planks and things like that from the boat. And so Paul has been kind of caretaking for a lot of these folks. And so he is in the midst of kind of picking up some of the stuff when he gets bit by what they call a viper. It's a snake. And he gets bit, and he jumps up, and you can see this snake just kind of dangling from him here a little bit. And the natives immediately tag him, and they say, the reason he got bit, he must be a murderer, because he made it to there, but the gods want him dead, because that's a poisonous viper. And so the gods want him dead, not to survive this. He must have created the biggest sin, and that is to murder. And so he must be a murderer, and they've already tagged him. In that split second that Paul is bit, they tag him a murderer. They don't even know his name. They don't even know who he is. They don't even know his story, but they've tagged him that he must be the greatest sinner of all 276 people on the boat because a snake bite has gotten him. What would they do if they saw a rabbit? I'm just asking. Paul is able to pull the snake off of him, and he throws it to the ground. And everyone's just kind of, okay, you're going to die, because that's a poisonous thing. And they're just kind of, you can imagine this kind of just hush as everybody's just like watching, for this man to just fall, and he doesn't. He just kind of goes, ouch, and throws it down, and he goes about his business. And everyone is just totally thrown off by this. All of these natives that know this snake and know that you get bit by it and you die from it, they know that what has happened here should be killing this guy, Paul, and Paul's just walking around like, hoot-de-doo, all that kind of stuff. Maybe asking for a Band-Aid, I have no idea. But they see him and they think, immediately they switch their thought. He must be a god. He must be a god. And so they start welcoming him into open arms. The minute that he survived it, how quickly they changed. When he got bit, they were ready to condemn him and wait for his death without doing a darn thing. He survives. They immediately think that he is a god. They invite him into their area. He actually meets some of the royalty. And he actually he starts to meet with people, and he starts to heal some of the sick. And so they're really convinced he's a god until he tells them otherwise. None of us are gods, right? He starts to tell them that he is Paul. And it's not until then that he is able to say who he is and what he's there for, to spread the message of God himself. So quickly they made the assumption of, one, he was a villain, two, he was a god, and what turns out was they stopped and were able to finally listen and know that he is just a guy spreading the gospel like we are. Imagine how quickly we judge people. I just want us to think about that. Now, we look at this and we think, oh, those Maltanians, they are just these savage people that someone gets bit. I bet if he had a Zippo lighter, they would just think that, you know, he'd be able to rule the world. But imagine how many times we judge people. The first time that we see somebody, did you know that it takes estimated 6 seconds before the minute that we meet somebody before we make a judgment on them? 6 seconds. 6 seconds before I even meet you, it takes me 6 seconds to walk over to introduce myself, and I've already pegged you in my mind of who I think you are, what I think you are, whether I think you're a villain or a friend or any of that stuff. 6 seconds, and I have totally defined you in my mind. We haven't changed much from 2,000 years ago when Paul first came on shore and got bit by a viper. Sometimes we're the viper that's doing the biting. And we're deciding whether or not a person in our mind, in our heart, lives or dies. Whether they're an enemy or whether they're a friend. In 6 seconds, we make that judgment. That's why you see in news, we can make sound bites so quickly. We read one headline. This guy shouldn't be trusted. Oh, he shouldn't be trusted. This guy is the greatest guy in the world. Oh, he's the greatest guy in the world. 6 seconds, we make that judgment. 26 letters. 26, am I right? 26 letters in the alphabet. That's it. 26 letters. 26 letters that we can form and make over 100,000 words to choose from. By those 26 letters we can take in our minds, we can put them together and form them. If you look at these letters on the screen right now, you can actually take some of them and you can form letters in your head right now. With 26 letters, in just a matter of seconds, you can take any of these letters here and you can form them into your own words. That's power. That's what we do in our world. That's how we communicate. That's how I am speaking to you right now, is because in my head at the split second, I am choosing from 26 letters to form words and put those words into sentences and to communicate with you. It tells you how I'm feeling, it tells you who I am, it tells you where I'm going, and it also tells me what I feel about you. And in those words, we can choose to speak kindness, or we can choose to judge and be quite evil in our thoughts and in our words. By those 26 letters, we can take those and make combinations that can either make you feel very good about yourself or make you feel very terrible about yourself. By forming those words, I can get people to be on your side and be supportive of you. Or I can try everything I can to turn the world against you. And that's what we're doing. In our news, in our social media, in all of these venues and everything like that, we often try to pick those words, those letters, and form the right words and the things that actually destroy rather than build up. We start to take things and we start to put labels on people. Villain, their lifestyle, their race. And we start to turn those words into something that is not okay. And by those words, some of us have been tagged with those words, and we live with those words. And suddenly those words, those little 26 letters, those words are formed, and our life becomes heavier and heavier because we're carrying this burden of what people have called us and what people have described us as and what people have named us. Without even knowing us, they have said they have bit us by a viper and said that we deserve to die. And some of us, that weight gets pretty heavy. Some of us have been tagged by things that we have done or things that we just are or people that, but what they haven't met is us. 6 seconds and we form those words instead of coming to you and saying, your turn. Instead of forming the words, I'm going to listen to your words. I'm going to understand who you are. I'm going to actually take a pause longer than 6 seconds, and I'm going to listen to what you have to offer in this world. Because those words that we form can be words of evil, they can be words of distrust, they can be words of labeling, but they can also be words, we can take words from those 26 letters, and we can form words like love and understanding, grace, acceptance. And did you know that when you build a word, when you take a word like jerk face, I'm going to play it safe, jerk face. Let's say that I see you. And in 6 seconds, I think to myself, oh, that's one of those jerk faces. I can tell. I can tell by the way he's, because he walks like a jerk face, he sounds like a jerk face, he's a jerk face. And so I start telling other people, you know that guy over there? He's a jerk face. I don't know if you know this. I can read people. I've got jerk face radar. He's a jerk face right over there, everybody. And suddenly he walks around thinking, why does everyone think I'm a jerk face? And then they start adding other words to that. You know, boob head, moron, twit, you know, because the word jerk face invites other words that are in the same category of negativity. And so a lot of us, we get together and we start, I know his wife's agreeing completely with all these words, but we're going to pause right there. Yeah, she's really enjoying this. She's adding some right now. But we can add some words of negativity before we have ever really met him. We can add all those words of negativity and form our opinion about him, just like the people in Malta were doing with Paul by saying that he was a villain, he was the worst sinner, he deserved to die. In those split seconds while Paul is getting hit by the snake, they had already formed this whole army of words formed by little letters put together in our head to communicate something that tears you apart rather than builds you up. But in the same sense, we can meet somebody and actually listen to them, get to know them, and form words like acceptance, beautiful, wonderful, talented, friend. And by saying those words, when we tell other people about those words, they look at you and they start to add their own words. Words like grace and cherish, adore, welcoming, love. The words that we choose out of those 26 letters and make those little sentences can make or break our world. And I mean that. They can make or break our world. Because I believe that when we look at people that have been downtrodden and hurt, they're going to have a negative life in the world. And that negativity is going to have ripple effects that affects other people around them. But I also believe that history is not made by big events. I don't think Abraham Lincoln freeing the slave was the big event. I think Abraham Lincoln as a young child, when somebody said, I believe someday that you can be president, that was the big event. That when he was around people that, now believe it or not, a lot of people don't know this, but before he was on president, Abraham Lincoln suffered from depression. And at two times, I think, in his life, he was on suicide watch. The big moment was not when he freed the slaves. The big moment was when somebody said, you're having issues, but I am there for you. And they formed words like, I believe in you. I will protect you. I love you. I am with you. Instead of, you're just a jerk face. Those were the things that built up a person like him, that made him grow up into a place where he started to build up other people. And we had freedom because of that. One of those big moments in our life is the time when we look to our neighbor and we either say in 6 seconds, hate or love. 6 seconds. The one thing that I thought was funny is that in the days of Paul, when he was bit by this viper, everybody was judging him, and not one person was helping him. Not one person said, would you like some help getting that snake off your arm? Actually, they were just waiting for him to die. I invite us to pick our words wisely, to take more than 6 seconds to judge our neighbor. And the best way to judge our neighbor is to, like the pumas, listen to them and watch them and learn from them. And you might just find that the people that you are judging are the people that you will one day call friend.